This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. If Michael Monroe Goodman's middle name sounds familiar, yes, there's a good reason. Michael's parents were friends with Bill Monroe for years. And yes, there's more to this story. Michael joins me for this edition of Americana Music Profiles as we talk about the Bill Monroe connection, his musical career, and his third full-length album, When the Rain Came. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, so glad to be here.
Glad to have you join us all the way from Los Angeles, California.
Los Angeles, California. Yeah.
I don't think that's been home for you for the whole time, though, has it?
No. I grew up in Southern Kentucky in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Grew up there and spent most of my life there in Nashville, and then lived in Louisville, Kentucky a while, and then lived in Chicago for a while doing Broadway stuff up there and wow. Comedy and music, and then came to L.A. about 6 years ago. But for who knows what reason, I guess to try to see what it was like out here.
Whatever. Yeah. But okay.
I'm just a Southern boy at heart. So it's, I'm very much like a fish out of water out here.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Have you been pursuing entertainment? I think you've done some stage work, music. Is that kind of been what you do for a living, or is that part of what you do?
That's mostly what I do. I mean, when I was in Chicago, I was lucky enough to be in some really big Broadway sit-down shows there. And so when I was there, I was making a good living doing that.
Yeah.
And, so it was good because I was making money doing that. And it was like, great, I can have the money to put into my music
uh-huh.
and stuff and be my own boss. So when I came out to LA, the thought was, well, I'll use the connections, whatever I have in Chicago, and I'll come to LA. Maybe I can do TV work or voiceover work or all kinds of stuff. And which will just kind of cross promote and still make good money where I can make music the way I want and whatnot. And, that kind of didn't happen or hadn't happened at all. And so, but what has happened since I came to LA is I put together a real good band and have been lucky enough to kind of be the one of only a couple like real old school country guys in LA. So that kind of, there's not a huge country market in LA,
right?
Or even a big live music market in LA anymore. But what country music outlets there are in LA and the surrounding area, I've been fortunate enough that they've embraced me pretty good, and I stay fairly busy playing at all the venues around here
because I'm like, that's awesome.
One of the only guys that's gutsy enough to play old country music.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Well, yeah. We live in a time right now where that music is actually back in vogue a little bit. So,
yeah,
that's I'm sure a nice bonus to have in your favor.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's what's really good right now is, the beauty of the internet revolution with you know, artists can be independent artists, and you don't technically, you don't need a big label or anything like that like you used to have to. You can pretty much be exposed to anyone. So it comes with its own pros and cons. One, anyone can be out there, but also that also the problem with that is anyone can be out there. So then you got a flood of a market of, you know, a lot of people that otherwise would have been weeded out by the old school formula of, you know, so it's a much more watered down market. But if you're I guess I don't consider myself marketing savvy, whatever, I'm trying to figure it out, but if you can make yourself marketing savvy as a good artist, and you have something people, you know, want to hear, if you can get it out there, you can be your own boss, and you could have a 100% connection to your fans with no middleman or anything like that. And I think that's, I mean, organically, I think that's the way, the best possible way it could be for the fans and for the music artists to not have any, you know, naysayers or label heads or whatever in between the fans and the artists. And with social media, you can just talk directly to them. And so it's navigating that whole thing of figuring that out, and how to beat the algorithm and all that other stuff to connect artists with their fans. But I think once you do that, then you're home free then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good analysis. Backing up a little bit, you've got pretty deep roots with the music, country music, bluegrass music kind of thing, even to the point that you've got a pretty famous middle name.
Yeah, pretty famous. My parents were good friends with Bill Monroe before I was born, and my dad was obsessed with him, and so my parents went to church. Went to a church or whatever that Bill went to down in Tennessee. Cause you know, I grew up in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is only like 30, 40 minutes from Nashville. And so, my parents would go to church with Bill. My dad like befriended him. Of course, Bill's real friendly. Anyone that, you know, would want to talk to him, he'd make friends real easily. So my dad was real outgoing, friendly. So he wanted to be friends with Bill. And so they got to know him. And then when, mom was expecting me, they asked for Bill's blessing to name me Monroe, and Bill was happy about that. And so from the time I was right, I mean, even before I was born, while I was in my mom's womb or whatever, they were backstage, you know, probably once a month or something at the Opry with Bill. You know, he'd let him, you know, let my parents come in and hang out backstage and whatnot. So being around that. So, and then even after I was born, we'd go there as a baby. My parents would go there probably once a month or every other month or something like that, and be backstage with Bill in the dressing rooms at the Grand Ole Opry. And, you know, so as a baby, it was just like this baby getting tossed around backstage to Grand Ole Opry. And, you know, just kind of soaked it all in for the first 3 years of my life until my parents split up. And then, but I mean, after that, I'd see Bill just at like festivals or stuff with my dad on the weekends and stuff. But I grew up around Bill, and I had no idea as a kid who Bill Monroe was as a legend, as a pioneer. To me, he was just like Uncle Bill, you know. And so, you know, he was always real great to me, and so, you know, I just kind of grew up around him. I didn't realize until later on in my years how much he meant to me in my psyche and my life as a person. You know, it wasn't until he passed away, and I've seen him several times before he passed away when I was a teenager. You know, being a teenager, and I was busy with my own things, but I've seen him a few times before he passed away. But when he passed away, and me and my dad went to the funeral, that was kind of when it hit me. The loss of how much he meant to me, and also kind of hit me being at the funeral, and Ralph Stanley, Ricky Skaggs were there singing, you know, hymns at the burial site and stuff. That kind of all hit me. The light hit me then of like the blessing of the kind of musical pioneer that I got to grow up around, and, you know, feel like family around him, you know, just because, you know, the relationship way it was is how good he was to me and everything. So it was just, you know, it just really made an impact on me. And it was another reason I, several years ago when I started, I've put out albums since I put out my first album when I was like 19. That was in 99 or something like that. That was my first experiment putting out my own music, you know, but I still had a lot to learn as far as my sound and production and everything. But then when I put out my Unbreakable Heart album back in 2015, I put it out and was promoting it and stuff and kind of found out there was way too many Michael Goodmans in the world. And that's a pretty boring common name. A lot of people, my mom would always call me Moreau, usually when I got in trouble. Mm-hmm. I hear my middle name as a kid. And I was kind of, and some people said, you know, I was like, why don't you go by your full name? Because it's like such a good,
yeah,
all three names. And I was kind of like, well, you know, I was like, yeah, maybe I will. It was one, I ain't got to worry about being confused with anybody else.
Right.
There's no one, I'll Google search. There was no one in the world I could find that had all three names.
Right.
And so, and I was like, well, that'd be good. And plus, too, it's like, you know, kind of wearing a badge of where I came from. Mm-hmm. So ever since then, now everybody just knows me as Michael Monroe Goodman. So it's funny, people from upbringing or whatever, you know, aren't used to that. So it's been forever since I've just been called Michael Goodman. And it's kind of took that on. And I wear it with pride because, I mean.
Sure, yeah.
I'm very proud of what it stands for with Bill. And then, too, I just want to kind of honor him, but do my own thing,
mm-hmm.
Obviously. But there's a lot of things about him that I see myself do very adamantly. I mean, one, with just like the business side of things, and especially being out here in L.A., there's a lot of great musicians out here. But a lot of the musicians I took for granted where I come from, you'd put together a band and you'd just throw out a song and everybody knew it,
mm-hmm.
you know, out here in California. You know, I was like, let's do this old, you know, Merle Haggard song. And people are just looking at me, like, I never heard that. And I'm thinking, how do y'all not know, you know?
So
a lot of what I've done having a band out here in California is I've been like not just a band leader and a songwriter, but I've kind of been like the mentor of like educating and teaching my band about country music history and how to play it, you know, and the essence, teach them the essence of it. And, you know, Bill, very much, that was Bill's whole thing, his whole career, you know, is he would find talented musicians for the Bluegrass Boys and bring them in. And, you know, he'd find these kids. They were usually people who joined
mm-hmm.
Bill's band were, you know, teenagers or just young adults and had never left their hometown. And Bill would pick them up off the side of the road, basically, after an audition, and they'd just go on the road with him. But he had his own sound, and he meticulously train them, you know, to play his music his way and the way that what he defined bluegrass music and what Bill Monroe music was. And so it's like everyone that played with Bill back then like got an education
mm-hmm.
in it. And I mean, a lot of people from that went on, you know, like Dale McCurry and lots of numerous other cats went on from Bill and made their own name as bluegrass artists. You know, it was like they kind of got an education
mm-hmm.
with Bill playing like that. And I've noticed in the last few years, I've like been like, oh, cool, I'm kind of doing that now with when I have to get a new band member or whatever. It's mm-hmm. like it's a training process, but it's real fun because I train them, but then they get real excited about it because I'm like teaching them, you know, about classic country or, you know, country and bluegrass. And, you know, and they're excited about it and, you know, and fascinated, I guess, with how involved in it I am. And I forget a lot of times. I take it for granted. It's so second nature to me. I mean, given I guess I've been around my whole life, it's so second nature to me of like the essence of country music and things. And I just forget that a lot of times I'll say things to my band or say things to people. And my wife has to remind me, she's like, you got to realize not everybody knows everything about country music. It doesn't come as natural.
Right.
Everybody else that does you. So I got like, oh yeah, right. I got to like bridge the gap. And, you know, I kind of not realize that it's not everybody's world
in the way it is mine.
So, you know, it was, I was like an adult before I started realizing things of, like I said, like growing up around Bill, I was like an adult before I realized the magnitude of, like, man, I was really blessed with an education of country music. They, like, a lot of country music fans would, or, you know, musicians would kill to have that education. And so, right.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview.
As an observer, you weren't even in his band, so you had a completely different perspective.
Right. Right. And it's right. I think that's what a lot of, I think that's why I resemble him more in personality than, musician wise. I mean, I'm going to cut a bluegrass or several bluegrass albums one day, or a tribute to Bill, or it's a tribute bluegrass album or something of that nature. But I really, you know, I don't want to copy him or anything like that. And he wouldn't want me to, but I've found my own influences of the country that inspire me to do what I do. But it's more of his personality that I feel like I've attached myself to things, like, you know, his funny wit. I love his, he was very funny, and I consider myself a comedian. But just as far as, like, how I rigidly run my band and take it very seriously, like that, like, he was very much like that. You know, he took music very seriously, and he's very serious about his band always dressing nice and the image they conveyed, because he wanted his music to be taken seriously. And I find myself that way very, very much, you know. So I feel like I adopt a lot of his personality traits, just emulating musically what he did.
Right,
I'm trying to do my own thing.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of his personality rubbed off on me, and I like that.
So you've got a new record, which isn't bluegrass, but I hear some bluegrass licks in there. There's a little bit, but it feels more in line with kind of honky tonk. I hear a little bit of Cash showing up in there. So tell me about the new record. It's out now. It's called When the Rain Came. Is that right?
Yes. When the Rain Came.
Yep.
I was real excited about this album. I had too much of a break. My last album came out in 2015.
Okay.
And
it's been a little while.
So I was like, I was due. Yeah, I don't know. Time got away from me or something, and I just kind of got away from it. But this album was very. It was this album was, for me, was a very spread my wings kind of thing, because on my first album, I was doing Million Dollar Quartet in Chicago, the Broadway show. You know, I was playing Elvis, Johnny Cash, and Carl Perkins. I was playing one of the three of them. And so when I did my first album in 2013, Unbreakable Heart, I felt compelled to, like, and these were the songs on that album, songs I had written over the years, but I felt compelled to, like, give it a Sun Records rockabilly kind of essence to it, or whatever, like a blend between Sun Records and Bakersfield kind of thing. And so I recorded it that way in the studio, and then the next album, The Flag That Bobbled Bill Monroe, I kind of did that one a lot more a lot closer to my natural feel, because I was kind of like, I didn't like that I tried to, like, emulate something for the first album, or trying to do a fag, because I got so many rockabilly friends, and you know, they want to go record at Sun Records, and they want to buy the original console and record and stuff like that, and there's that whole desire to chase that, and,
yeah,
you know, like, I tell them, like, listen, guys, Sam Phillips would have used Pro Tools if he had it,
right?
You know,
right,
like, you know, I was like, Sam Phillips was using the best equipment he had. He wasn't purposely trying to use outdated gear, and that's not what makes. That's not what made Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash great.
Right.
So with The Flag of Bobble Bill Monroe, I recorded that one on my own in a studio in Chicago. I just rented out a studio and recorded it. But at the end of the day, I'm a good tracking engineer, but I'm not that great a recording engineer. And so I was closer to the essence on that one of what I wanted. But for this album, I kind of got to the point where I was like, okay, I know what I want to do. I know visually or audio-visually what I want to do with it. And I was like, I'm going to find me the right studio engineer that will speak my language, so I can just go in there and be a producer on it,
right,
and do my own sound. And that was kind of what I do. And the first thing I did was two of the songs on the album were co-produced with Pete Anderson, who I'm a big fan of, with all his production of the Dwight Yoakam catalog and mm-hmm. playing guitar for Dwight. And he lives right down the road here from me in LA and plays a little Moose Lodge and stuff once a week. And so I'd hang out with him and meet him. And I mean, I like know most all of his guitar licks because I was a huge fan of his guitar playing. So I had the opportunity to work with him, and I really wanted to get his, I guess, insight on my songs, or maybe his approval of my music, and kind of wanted to see what vision he had for my songs. So I went in with a couple tunes with him. I played him all my songs as the album, and he liked them all. And he picked out the couple he thought we should do first. And we recorded them, and I learned a lot from him in his studio, and he did a great job, and it was a real cool relationship. But I kind of what he taught me off of his instincts, I kind of learned of, like, you know what, I've got to start trusting myself. I was like, I think I know everything I want to do with my music, and I'm like waiting around for someone else to tell me that. And working with Pete kind of showed me to trust, he showed me to trust my own instincts, because he kind of validated that in me. And I was like, here I am, like, not trusting my own instincts. And so then I produced the rest of the album on my own. I just, the other eight tracks, I was like, okay, well, I've got the wheels started with the first two tracks with Pete. And I was like, I'm going to trust myself with the rest of the album and go into another great engineer studio. And I just knocked it out. We recorded it in like a matter of a couple of weeks. And I just trusted my instincts, and by doing that, I was really happy with it. Yeah. Just what I was putting out. I was just like, if I'm hearing something, then that's what I should do. And I think for a lot of my career, I've heard stuff, but then like questioned, like, well, is that right? And it's like, you gotta get over there. Like, it's not anything to do with right. It's about what is my instincts on stuff, and what is it that appeals to me. And so I've kind of just bridged on this album, really branched out into trusting myself and really giving myself permission to do what I feel to do. And so I was really pleased with the way a lot of the songs turned out on the album, and you know, they're very I feel like they're very eclectically different on the album, because it's not just like 10 songs of shuffles, or, you know, 10 songs of all sound the same thing.
Right.
It's like the whole album's is a blend of, you know, like foot stomping music combined with, you know, something a little fun and comedic, combined with something real deep and dark, combined with something that's real light. And so I felt pretty good when I was putting the album together. Like, I kind of wanted a whole piece of like, I feel like the whole album needs one of each of these types of songs. Right, I feel I check that out for the album. Yeah.
Well, it turned out really good. I really enjoyed listening through it, and certainly wish you great success with it. If folks want to purchase the album, want to listen to the music, catch a show somewhere. I know you're playing quite a bit out on the West Coast out there. What's the best way for them to get in touch and find out all that information?
Oh, go to michaelmonroegoodman.com, and you can. That's my website. I try and keep it up to date with all the gigs around here and the latest music and stuff like that. Or they can find me on all those social media things at Michael Monroe Goodman. That's my handle on all of them. Or just search in Michael Monroe Goodman. Luckily, I'm the only one with that name.
Right.
And so you can follow me on Instagram. I'm not the best at the social media stuff. I usually post gigs and stuff on there, but I'm learning how to be more involved with of using it as more of a platform. You know, I'm old school and grew up performing in front of people, so this learning how to also connect with the people, or like connect with fans and kind of entertain them through social media posts too. I'm kind of learning how to do that, just so I can better connect with the fans, because I want to do that for them. But you can find me all those places. And I'm playing a lot in right now. I'm playing a lot in California. Just got back from being out east in Birmingham, Kentucky. Okay. But I'll be touring up north a little bit in the winter, up in Wyoming and play out in Vegas every other month or so, and play in Arizona a lot. Awesome. Travel out to Arizona a lot. So, yeah, I got the just got the touring van back today from maintenance. So looking to stay out on the road. And,
that's awesome.
And,
yeah. Cool. Good.
Unless I can.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I enjoyed hearing your story, and I love that history that you've got there. And
thank you.
Wish you the best with it, and we'll look forward to the Bluegrass Records when you get around to those, too. So,
oh, yeah, one day.
Yeah.
I will.
Sure. Yeah, good. Well, thank you, Michael.
All right, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.